Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to today's episode of Financial Lifeguard on Duty. I am your host and financial lifeguard, Christine Lukin. I empower high-earning professionals and small business owners to rescue their financial dignity. Today's episode is College Scholarship, Chasing Unicorns. Our special guest today is Dan Bissig, also known as Dan the College Man. Dan Bissig is an author, college admissions and funding expert, and founder of College and Beyond LLC. He is passionate about helping students attend the right college at the lowest price, pursue the right major, and graduate on time. Dan has helped hundreds of families all across the United States and even globally navigate their way through the college process and has spoken to thousands of families over the past 12 years. He has also authored a terrific book entitled The College Entrance Game Plan, Your Comprehensive Guide to Collecting, Organizing, and Funding College. Welcome, Dan, and thanks for being here.
Thanks, Christine. It's great to be with you today.
Awesome. So in today's competitive environment, is pursuing college scholarships like chasing unicorns?
Well, I'll tell you, there's no doubt that it is a challenge, and the reason being is so many families have really kind of figured out the formula, at least to some extent, not to mention the internet has really opened up the floodgates when it comes to families having the ability to understand all the different places that you can look for money. But the key part of it is trying to help students position themselves so they have the best chance to get these scholarships.
Okay. So you're going to tell us first what types of college scholarships are out there.
You got it. Yeah. So the very first thing to understand is that there are merit-based scholarships, which are scholarships that are awarded to students where it recognizes their terrific academic performance. Also, maybe a talent that they have and their leadership abilities. And then there are need-based scholarships that are awarded to those who demonstrate a financial need. And that really all comes down to completing those financial aid forms like the FASFA and the CSS profile, those getting submitted to the colleges, and then those colleges coming through with the money. In addition to that, we know that the money is awarded to students, again, based on their academics as well as their athletics. And so it truly is a matter of figuring out, okay, what's going to happen for this student so that they have the best chance to get the most money.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you showed me something very interesting some time ago about sports scholarships.
Oh,
and
yeah.
What's your
well,
chances of getting those? So would you elaborate a little bit on that? Because I found that very interesting.
Sure. Yeah. So there is no doubt that there are plenty of students out there that are playing sports. And, you know, in many cases, moms and dads have all kinds of ideas that my son or daughter might have a chance to play at the next level. I mean, my gosh, look at the amount of money that families are spending on, you know, club sports, for example, things that back when I was growing up, I mean, we were just told to get outside and have a good time. But
right.
It really is pretty amazing when you look at the kinds of monies that are available. So, for example, the two biggest opportunities for scholarships, and we happen to have some of these here in the greater Cincinnati area, is rowing. For guys, it's a 17.88% scholarship opportunity. For women, 55.5%, you know, for the colleges that offer those. But when you start looking at everything else that's out there, like baseball for guys, you know, 0.51%. Soccer for guys, 0.35%. How about, you know, volleyball for the ladies, 0.66%. My only point is this. You always, always have to have a backup plan because of the what if. You know, what happens if you don't get that big scholarship at that college or university, you know, based on the sport that you were trying to get. So it's a really big deal.
Right. And correct me if I'm wrong, if someone actually gets a scholarship like that, but then they're subsequently injured and can't continue to play, they actually lose that future scholarship money. Isn't that right?
They sure do, Christine. Yeah, the thing that families have to realize is that scholarships like that are annual renewable, which means if you get disenfranchised and decide not to continue with the sport, if you get injured, what if the coaching staff even changes? That happened to one student one time where the coaching staff changed. What are you going to do? Because suddenly you don't have those scholarship dollars that are available to you. And so that could really be a heartache for somebody who has applied to a school and was counting, of course, on that money to help pay for it. So that's why I always say with students, you've got to make sure you've got a backup plan.
Yes. So how do these students position themselves to qualify for the merit-based scholarships?
Well, so there's really three or four components that come into it. Usually it's based on the unweighted GPA of the student.
Okay.
It's also going to be based on their ACT or SAT scores. It's going to be based on the curriculum that they've taken and the extracurricular activities that they're doing. And by the way, just one comment about that unweighted GPA. I'm not saying that students should not go for advanced placement or international baccalaureate classes. I'm not saying that at all. As a matter of fact, in order to qualify for the big scholarships out there, you really do need to do some things where you're taking the more advanced classes based on what your school offers. Because everybody else is. When it comes to the ACT or the SAT, some schools do something called super scoring, where they'll take the highest subject matter on multiple tests and add those together, and then that becomes your super score, although the vast majority out there don't. You know, they're just looking for that one cumulative score. And then when it comes to the curriculum again, it's really going to be that they're going to look at the scholarship committees. They're going to look at how difficult were the classes that you took compared to what you could have taken. And so it's very important that you've got a good list down. But here's the kicker. The real biggie is, in order to get the big scholarships, students have to do something that I refer to called your hook. And the hook is, how did you do something to make yourself stand out from the rest of the crowd for all the right reasons? Did you start a foundation? Did you start a business? Did you write a book? You know, did you do something that was unique that people can look at and they'll, you know, then be able to also, the students maybe can communicate that through their essay that they write. It's really a game changer. It can be a game changer if you're really trying to go for the big money at these schools.
Interesting. And so explain with this weighted GPA, because obviously, as kids are applying, they're probably at the end of their junior or senior year. So is there kind of like a critical year where their grades need to be really good? I mean, if they slough off in their freshman year or their sophomore year, is that really going to hurt them?
It sure can. In fact, the way I describe it is this. If you have a tough freshman year and, you know, desperately are trying to get your GPA, your cumulative GPA fixed, it's like turning the Titanic away from that iceberg. It really can be difficult. And not only that, but students have to realize that the vast majority of time when their transcript is sent off to these colleges for scholarship consideration, it's going to be based on the cumulative GPA of the average of their freshman, sophomore, and the end of their junior year. It rarely will have the beginning of their senior year. And so, again, you've only got six semesters or 12 quarters to be able to have an impact on that. That's a big deal. That's a really, really big deal.
Yeah, so that freshman and sophomore year, those are critical if students want to get a merit-based scholarship. They can't be messing around.
They cannot be messing around. By the way, I said 12 quarters. I meant 16 because that's, you know, if you're in a quarter system. But they can't mess around. And so often, where it gets really frustrating for some families, in fact, I'll never forget, I was doing a college workshop at a high school, and a parent stayed around and walked up to the guidance counselor afterwards, and he said, is there any chance you guys are going to recalculate my son's GPA? This was in the fall of his senior year. And the counselor said, no, I'm sorry, we don't do that. He said, wow, that means that my son is 0.005 away from it rounding up to a 3.5, which he needs. And because of that, it's going to cost him $5,000 a year. I mean, that's heartbreaking. Yeah, it's a heartbreaking situation to run into that. So I always encourage students to take it seriously from the beginning. And I can tell you, because I do senior exit interviews at a lot of the local high schools, one of the biggest regrets students have is that they didn't take their freshman year as seriously as they should have, and they end up really paying for it for the rest of their 4 years in high school when it comes to the GPA.
Right. Well, and that can affect how much the family needs to take out for student loans.
Sure can. Yeah,
and
in fact,
that's obviously going to impact them. Sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. It really can be a financial challenge. There's no doubt about it. It can really, you know, it's, especially, again, if you're depending on those monies, it can put a lot of added pressure, and suddenly the only way for you to go to that particular school is that you've got to take out significant college loans.
Yeah. Well, and then you end up in my office when you're 30 or 35 and you still have those loans.
Absolutely. I mean, that, you know, the worst part about that is that black cloud continues to follow you for many years into the future, and it occasionally zaps you with a lightning bolt, you know, reminding you, hey, I'm still over here. And,
right.
You know, that's why a lot of these kids, if they could look in the mirror, what we don't want them to do is think, I coulda, shoulda, woulda. In other words, start fresh right from the beginning and having a solid GPA so that you don't have any regrets.
Right. So you have told me that the colleges themselves are actually the largest source of scholarships.
Yeah, they sure are. As a matter of fact, about 73% of the scholarship dollars out there anymore come from the colleges themselves. The best part about a college scholarship is the fact that it is renewable, assuming that you continue to do what's necessary. In other words, carry a full load of classes, maintain a certain GPA in most cases that they're going to expect. I mean, and then also, if it's specific to a degree program that you're continuing to pursue that major. So without a doubt, it is the best research that you can do when it comes to finding the college scholarships. And so the balance, you know, the other, 27% of scholarship money that's available out there is going to come from private institutions, from the, you know, the different places that are out there giving money away to students based on, again, it could be their community service, could be that they write a great essay, it could be that it's based on, again, their outstanding academic achievement, any number of things.
Right. So do all colleges give out scholarships?
No. The answer is no, and I'll tell you why. So many times people think that I've got this high-achieving student, you know, who has done everything right. You know, they've got, again, top GPA, top test scores, great curriculum that they've taken. Heck, maybe they've even done something unique, again, a hook, something that really sets them apart. And yet the reality is, for some schools, that's just the golden ticket to get in the door from an admission standpoint. Mm. So if you're looking at the most selective colleges out there, the Ivy League schools, they do not give any merit-based scholarships out. Now, they will give out need-based scholarships.
Okay.
And so in that particular case, there's the possibility of, if you've got a financial need, and I'll give you an example. Harvard, for example, has what's called the Harvard Promise. And a family could have an income of $110,000 per year, joint income, and still, in that case, they will get a significant amount of need-based scholarship and grant money given to that student to help alleviate taking out any debt. So it's a phenomenal opportunity if a student gets that chance to do that. There's also a program out there called QuestBridge, and QuestBridge actually allows a student to be able to qualify for full-ride scholarships at some of those same prestigious schools. And again, it's driven 100% by financial need. So it has to be a high-achieving student who then is going to have the chance to go ahead and get that money put on the table.
Right. And so for those need-based scholarships, you've explained to me, you know, how they look at a family's income. Do you want to explain that just a little bit so those people who are listening and haven't experienced that, they have some idea how that's calculated?
Yeah, so absolutely. Every one of the schools are going to look for what's called the expected family contribution. And so it's all dependent upon four factors. The very first one is mom and dad's adjusted gross income. And that's going to be consistent whether it's public colleges or private colleges. They're going to look at that first, which means it by far has the biggest impact on your expected family contribution. Then they're going to move on to assets, specifically the parental assets, and it's non-retirement assets. So any money that you've got in checking, savings, money market, CDs, all those types of things are going to come into play. They do give parents an allowance based on the age of the oldest parents, where there can be a certain amount of money that's there without any impact on financial aid. But that's the second piece. The third piece is going to be the student's income. In other words, how much did they earn from a job? And they can earn up to about $6,000 without any impact on financial aid. Every dollar above that counts at 50 cents on the dollar. And then finally, it's the student's assets. And that's the worst place, by the way, to have money when it comes to the impact, because there is no allowance that's offered on that. And that is 20% of that amount that counts against financial aid. So the point is you add all four of those up and the dollar amounts that come with those, and that leads to your expected family contribution. If the expected family contribution is below the cost of the school, no matter what that school might be, then the question becomes, does that school help to fill the need with free money, scholarships and grants?
Mm-hmm.
If not, it's possible that a school will actually step in, and we've already mentioned it, they may step in and their solution is having the family take out loans. And
right.
So that's why you've got to do your research on these colleges to figure out how much money is really out there based on what the schools are giving away and why your
mm-hmm.
expected family contribution is a critical number for you to know.
Well, and sometimes that expected contribution is much more than the parents think it's going to be, because they don't take into account how much debt you have or your car payments or your house payments, right?
They don't. As a matter of fact, if you apply to one of the more selective colleges, they're going to take into consideration the home equity that you've got. They're going to take
wow.
into consideration siblings' assets. They look a lot more – it's much more intrusive when it comes to them using the CSS profile, which leads to the institutional methodology of your expected family contribution. And so it's really, really important that families early in the process – of college spend time calculating that number so that they can figure out whether or not they may qualify for need-based aid, because everybody thinks that, you know, in our situation, we're spending all this money already. We've got to qualify for need-based scholarships and grants. And the truth of the matter is income alone can absolutely make it an impossibility, because it could be that your EFC is equal to or above the cost of the colleges that your students are looking at, or that, you know, as you're applying out there. And because of that, there's not going to be any need-based aid that's going to come to the family.
Right. And so I imagine that's something you talk about with the families that you're working with one-on-one to say, you know, look, you can go here, but you're not going to get any scholarships based off
yeah.
of your needs. But if you go here, this is going to cost you a lot less because of that.
Yeah, Christine, it is the very first component that I talk about in my practice, which is what I call the money talk, because you have to know what your expected family contribution is to have any sense of what types of scholarships and grants the family may receive. And I can tell you, every year, families deal with the shock and awe of seeing what that number is compared to the kinds of schools that they were looking at. And then they have to deal with, okay, we've got to make some really firm decisions, because I really do believe that when it comes down to picking colleges, you've got to look at four things. You've got to look, is it the right financial fit right off the bat? Is it the right academic fit, the right social fit, and the right geographic fit? And the only other thing we might throw in there is it the right athletic fit, you know, if they're going to play a sport, or the right mm-hmm. talent fit if they're going to go on and do, like, drama or, you know, theater or music programs or whatever. So
right.
But you start with the money. You've got to have that conversation up front. And look, if a student's blessed to have parents who can write a check for everything, that's awesome. But every
right.
family that I ever come across, and I'm sure with you too, they want to do everything they can to pay as little as they can for college.
Right.
And the only way you start that is to start with that number. So.
Yes. So what are some of the best places that students can go to look for these scholarships?
Yeah, great question. So I will tell you that there are a ton of options out there. Some of my favorite search engines include a website called tuitionfundingsources.com. It's actually put on by Wells Fargo Bank. They claim mm-hmm. they have one of the largest databases of scholarships out there. CAPEX, CAPPEX.com is a great resource. Because it has not only private scholarships that they talk about, but also the college-specific scholarships that are there. One of my favorites is called MyScholly.com. What's neat about it was put together by a young man who is a college graduate just a couple of years back. He went on Shark Tank. Mark Cuban loved his idea and decided to invest in him, and it's all driven based on answering 8 specific questions. One of those questions, by the way, is a lengthy list of all the different activities that you've been involved in high school. But then what it does is it kind of filters through the thousands and thousands of scholarships that are out there and gives students an idea of what makes sense. Another one is scholarshipexperts.com. That's a really good website. And then raise.me is very interesting because what it does, it's a scholarship that is based on private colleges that are out there. There's a handful of private colleges who gives students credit for their academic successes when they're in high school. So their GPA and their ACT scores, for example, get factored into that. And then these colleges basically give students discounts so that they've got the ability to, you know, to actually put some money on the table if they're considering these different colleges. I also suggest do the research on the college websites themselves. I mean, sometimes you can dig deep and find out scholarships that other students have received from outside sources, maybe even the college financial aid departments. Talk to your teachers, your employers, your parents' employers, maybe club leaders or coaches, I mean, to help you find things. High school websites a lot of times do a really nice job of especially promoting the local scholarships, and that's a big deal. I mean, let's find money locally to really help students out. So, you know, that's a great way
right.
to do it. Don't forget there's lots of apps out there, too, that students can look for, as well as books. I mean, there's lots of books that have been written on the subject.
Including yours.
Yeah, including mine, right, yeah. You're absolutely right.
So tell me what maybe one or two of the most unique scholarships that kids that you've worked for have secured.
Oh, well, that's interesting. So I had a young lady that I worked with just last year who applied for and got a really nice scholarship from the Kentucky Department of Transportation. She's studying engineering down at the University of Louisville. And what happens is because of that scholarship, she's going to have or going to be required after she graduates to actually work for them for 3 years. And that's kind of, think of it a lot like a ROTC scholarship. It's where she's going to give back her time based on the money that they put up for her to be able to do it. I love students who go for the Rotary scholarships and the Kiwanis scholarships. I mean, that's partially how I put myself through college too, years ago. But those scholarships are out there. I mean, I'll use my daughter as an example. She got scholarships focused on teaching, you know, so those were really targeted, as well as some community service scholarships that she received. Believe it or not, my son got a scholarship because he was doing scholastic trap shooting. So, yes, he was handling a shotgun on a regular basis, shooting those little orange clay pigeons. But in the end, all of his scholarship dollars added up to about $10,000. Not too bad,
wow.
huh? You know,
no,
so,
not too bad at all.
So one other advice thing I would share is students do everything that you can to Google whatever makes you unique. There are scholarships out there if you're too tall, if you're too short, if you're a candyaholic, if you're a redhead, if you're vegan, if you are into bagpipe playing. You know, if you've got the last name of Gatlin or Gatling, think Gatling gun, You could actually apply. Yeah, you could apply for a scholarship at UNC Chapel Hill. It's amazing. It's amazing the kinds of scholarship opportunities that are out there. So
basically, if families are focused and motivated that they're not chasing unicorns, no, they're not going to trip over these scholarships. It is going to take some work, but
yeah,
they are out there.
They are indeed. The bottom line is you have to do the work. You know, I'd suggest to students that they look at maybe applying for maybe one a week. And I will tell you that scholarship searching can start as early as like the fall of the senior year. And I ought to stress that to you. The vast majority of scholarships really become available starting in about November, December, but really heavy duty in February, March, and April of the senior year. Now, that's not to say that there aren't other scholarships out there that students can even apply for in grade school, middle school, and early high school, but there's just, you know, they're fewer and far between. So I'm of the opinion early in the process, if you're even before that senior year, go ahead and spend some time doing the research, get on the websites, do everything that you can to identify which scholarships you're going to go after based on your resume of accomplishments. Put those in a file called your scholarship file, and then in the future, there's no doubt that those will come due again, and just make sure that you're ahead of the game when it comes to the application deadlines and getting them all the materials that they need, because I believe, you know, the phrase goes like this, 100% of the shots you don't take don't go in. So,
exactly.
You got to get out there, and you got to, you know, try something. I will tell you that the young lady I was talking about with that civil engineering scholarship, she applied for, I want to say, 31 scholarships. She got 9. Those are pretty good odds.
Wow.
But you know what? It took a lot of work. She wrote a lot of essays. She stayed on top of the deadlines and things like that, and it absolutely paid off for her. So it can be done, but you're not going to get anything if you don't do anything.
Absolutely. All right, so we've got just about 3 minutes left. So if you would just take a minute or so and let listeners know how they can connect with you, and you can work with families all over the country and even on the other side of the world.
I can, yeah. So the cool part about my practice, I've been doing this for 12 years, and my summers I have a lot of fun because I visit colleges, I get on the campuses, I talk to admissions and financial aid officers, but my practice is very much about trying to take away the stress and anxiety that often, you know, goes into the college process with families. And so it's all about trying to connect the dots on all the things that you've got to do. I do work with families all over the United States in really 4 areas. So it's what I call the money talk, career identification and college selection, the admissions process, which is all the applications and essay review, and then the financial aid side of things. So the FASFA, the CSS profile, and the institutional forms. And it's real easy for families to get in touch with me because they can reach me either through my website, which is collegeandbeyondllc.com, or they can also email me at danbissig, which is B as in boy, I-S-I-G, at collegeandbeyondllc.com, or they can always give me a call at my office at 859-283-2655. But I can tell you, in this modern age with technology, virtual meetings are awesome. And by the way, even locally, I have some families that decide to do that instead because it's just easier than hopping in the car and dealing with the traffic nightmares that often, you know, occur out there. So,
yes. All right. Well, Dan, thanks again for joining us on the Financial Lifeguard on Duty podcast, and thanks to all of you for listening. As always, you can find me and plenty of free money wellness resources on my website at christinelukin.com. I look forward to talking with you next time. Until then, have an amazing week.
Thanks, Christine.